Hi, I'm Marcus.
And I'm Nick.
And we are Working Class Nerds.
Where the podcast gives you no information about your favorite information.
Today is Thursday, March 21st, 2019. You can find this, you're not really going to hear my voice on this podcast, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Buzzsprout, Stitcher, and you can find our podcast also on workingclassnerds.com.
This week's episode, we're going to be talking about our upcoming trip to PAX East and breaking down our excitement for the upcoming Game of Thrones final season. Joining us in this discussion is Dr. John Redden. Dr. Redden is a professor in the Physiology and Neurobiology Department at the University of Connecticut, and not only is he my favorite professor that I've had in my undergraduate career, but he's also a giant Game of Thrones fan. So welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. And what have you been up to in the video game and pop culture media world for the past couple of weeks?
So we just finished building up for spring break, so it's actually been pretty busy these past couple of weeks, but I did get a chance to check out Umbrella Academy on Netflix. I don't know if you guys have...
I heard it's really good.
I have also heard it's really good.
It's a pretty solid 7 or 8 out of 10. It has a Watchmen-esque vibe to it, so if you imagine like Watchmen meets X-Men with like a little bit of Kick-Ass and some time travel for good measure, it's a pretty interesting show.
That's cool. That sounds great. I loved Watchmen. I'll have to check that out.
The other thing I got going on is, I don't know if this is actually a pop culture, but since this is a show for nerds,
sure.
I'm watching Star Trek Discovery, and I have to just start it because I have to binge it because it's paid access. But that's also surprisingly good. It's probably the best Star Trek show they've had in a couple of years.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's all fair game on the show as far as shows, games, whatever you've been sinking your teeth into.
I don't feel like paying CBS, which is a local channel, is worth ever subscribing to watch a Star Trek show, in my opinion. Where, you know, like a Disney service that's coming, that's worth it to me. Yeah. Even like HBO Go, I could see paying for it for a month or two so you could watch all the Entourages or any of the good movies
Sopranos,
they have.
Sopranos.
Game of Thrones. Nah, not Game of Thrones, but really... anything else, but no.
Oh, come on.
No, we would give it a shot. My wife and I have actually been talking about watching it, but I think, like, the blood and guts would might get her. But anyway, I can understand spending the money on those type of subscriptions, but paying a subscription to watch Star Trek, like CBS, I can watch Big Bang Theory every night at 6 o'clock at night.
Right.
I don't need a subscription to watch it.
Right.
So it's kind of like one of those things, like, why would I pay for a service for one show?
Right.
So apparently in Europe, it's included with Netflix, so that they don't have the same pay model that we have here in the States, which is kind of unfair.
Yeah, right.
CBS's model is totally the worst, though, because not only do they charge you, but there's tiers. So, like, if you don't pay enough money, then you have to watch with commercials, even though you're actually paying out of pocket.
Oh, yikes. That's terrible.
It is. It's truly terrible, because the commercials are, like, 2 minutes long. You can't fast forward through them, and it's, like, always for useless things like Tide. It's never right. anything interesting.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Car you're, insurance and Tide.
What do you mean? You're a professor of Scientology. You you guys talk about eating Tide Pods at UConn. I mean, come on. No,
I think Hulu does that too. Don't they have?
Yeah, they have the tiered plans where you have to pay
to skip the ads or something like that.
Right.
Which is also crappy. But I think,
I just activated. Okay. So I'm trying to get through the whole season in 1 month so I don't have to reactivate it.
Is it $10 a month?
I think it might be 8 with commercials and then maybe more than that without. I think it's like 12 or something like that.
Okay.
And I guess, so will you continue to pay for Netflix once Disney Go is here?
Definitely.
Yeah, I think there's enough Netflix exclusives that I actually want to watch. And then also, like, shows that aren't on the air anymore, that like The Office or Parks and Rec or, you know, things in that vein that I want to watch consistently. And they have a lot of good stand-up comedy, too, that's Netflix exclusive.
Right? Well, yeah, they said their whole path forward is actually sci-fi and stand-up, right? I mean, that's what they're choosing to invest all of their money in for the original programming.
Right.
But I'm actually a huge fan of Netflix-produced content. So I'll definitely keep my subscription afterwards. I think I've, you know, seen most of the shows that are Netflix originals.
Right. Yeah, me too.
So check out Umbrella Academy.
Yes, we definitely will. Well, at least I will.
All right, Nick, I'm going to be so mad. in about 3 seconds because I haven't read your notes yet. If you tell me you haven't gamed at all in spring break, I know you've been sleeping in, except the days you have to work. But
yeah, so every day.
Whatever. You, there better have been some gaming that you can say you've played. And go.
Okay, there is some gaming, but it's not what you're going to want. So anyways, I'll take it from the top. spring break was this week, like John was saying. But unlike most people, I didn't really go anywhere tropical. I'm just working extra at the hospital and trying to play some games, but unfortunately, rather unsuccessfully. While I did watch a Netflix action movie, which was mediocre, that Ben Affleck one, a movie called Triple Frontier. It was like 5 out of 10. I'm definitely glad I didn't see it in theaters, but I'm not mad that I, you know, was folding laundry during it and used it as a distraction. That's pretty much where that movie sat for me. Beyond that, Marcus gave me his old gaming headset, which is sweet because mine broke, my other one. And I was trying to get on Siege, but I chose to take a nap after work today instead of game.
It's a good choice. Wah.
Well, I was trying to come on the show and I didn't want to be a total zombie. I got like 4 hours of sleep last night, but
what, you Marcus? Haven't tried. Wait, you haven't tried the headset yet?
No, not yet. Or the Vega TV you gave me.
I gotta go.
But it's been mostly working at the hospital, and that thunk was Marcus putting his headphones down.
I'm so done.
How do you rate headsets? I mean, what makes a nice headset different than a not so nice headset?
I would say, well,
anything Logitech.
Marcus is Logitech or go home. Like, some people are Apple snobs. Marcus is a Logitech snob.
Well, for the... What I like
so
about...
You also then have a PC, I assume.
Yes. Yes, he does. Marcus is a PC gamer. I can use my laptop to game, but it's not great for it. I'm primarily PS4.
My headsets have to be comfortable. The sound has to be incredible in them. And for the wireless ones, the battery has to last for a while.
I want good directionality. I don't know if that's the proper word for it, but I want to be able to hear, like, the game I play, Rainbow Six Siege, need to hear when people are above you, below you, to your left, right, whatever it is.
And don't worry, those headsets are 7.1.
Right. So that's 7 speakers of surround sound, which is pretty sweet. So that's what I like, mainly the directionality and then the noise canceling on the outside. So if it's, like, not that great noise canceling, that's a minus points. If the microphone's not great, that's minus points because it's just crappy for your teammates if you sound like you're 7 miles away or speaking underwater or something.
Speaking.
So with the noise canceling headphones, though, like, have you ever had someone else in your house, like, watch you play and just have no idea what you're doing? Like, I remember I was also playing Rainbow Six way back when with the headset, and, you know, it's like, Bravo team, go! And then, like, I think my roommate at the time walked in, and they're like... Who are you talking to? Like, what, Bravo? What?
Yeah. It used to be, I know with the Xbox 360, you could play the sound through your TV speakers and into your headset. So that wasn't too bad because then, like, you know, my girlfriend or whatever was, like, watching me play, could hear, like, the chat audio and stuff like that. But now with the PS4, you can't do that. So it's only in your headset. So yeah. So she's, I've played Siege with her sitting there, and I think that only happened once because she's like, I don't want to just sit there in silence while you play. This is terrible. Each match is like 45 minutes.
Right.
And you can't have one headphone on and one headphone off.
No, that's just terrible.
Right.
But, oh, so the little bit of gaming that I did do, Mariana, my girlfriend's down in, best girlfriend ever, I have to say that, is down in Trumbull, where she lives, which is like an hour and a half away from me, for spring break. So I went and saw her yesterday, and while we were waiting for our pizza at the bar, we were playing, like, some crappy mobile games on my phone. They were, like, checkers and, like, Pong style, like, air hockey. It was fun. We got wicked into it. And people around us were like, what is wrong with you? What are you staring at the table there?
Yeah. They're not talking. They're just staring at their phone.
No, we were talking, and then it was like, all right, do you want to, like... I was like, do you want to play a game? And she was like, yeah. Because I was daydreaming a little bit, and was like, you know what? I want to download a Pokemon emulator for my phone, which I still might do. Because I haven't... I like to just revisit that once in a while, just play a little nostalgia. Nostalgic Pokemon. But, and then I was like, you know what? That idea spawned. I should just pull some crappy mobile game up. I'm sure you can play, like, checkers or something on your phone and just have it, you know, set up so one person's on one side of the phone, one person's on the other. And sure enough,
the Battleship is like where that. It's at.
Oh, Battleship's a great one.
Surprisingly engaging.
Yeah.
Beer Pong's actually pretty good, too, through iMessage.
Oh, yeah. I've done that. Or the pool one. I forgot what it's called. Something. But
and there's good. Also like a spattering of other games that I still have yet to figure out how to play. Like they look really cool, but then nothing happens when you try to play them.
Right. There's I think there's a paintball one too, which was fun. I always school Marianne on that one.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
So there's a bunch of little mobile games you can play right through iMessage.
I can't do it though. Staring at your phone, like I just can't.
Yeah, I get you. So Marcus, that's it for me. What have you been up to this week?
What would you? Okay. You know me pretty well. When somebody challenges me, I go to the extreme. I'm like, oh, fuck yourself, right?
Right.
Like, don't challenge me and tell me I can't do something.
Right.
Like, I've been told that my whole life, and I just can't handle it well.
Yeah. It's like your trigger button.
Yeah, like, you can't jump off that cliff. Watch me, bro. You know?
Right.
You got to land in that spot right there. See that blue rock way under the water? No. Well, that's where you have to land. Got it. So, Medulla.
One of your guildies?
Yes. He and resident rich guy in SOTOR.
Yep.
Challenged me. So, we've been working on hard modes and all this stuff. And in one of the operations, there's a hidden boss.
Yep.
He's the top secret bonus boss that you have to... All right. So, it's 16 man. You need to be in 16 man ops team. Ops group, I mean. It's in hard mode, so it's harder than all the rest.
Yep.
You all have to be wearing this special mask that comes off of another boss somewhere else in the world. Yep. And everybody has to have that mask. And when you beat that boss, he only drops one mask.
Right.
So essentially, you have to beat it 16 times.
And then distribute the masks evenly.
So not only do you have to everybody wear the mask, then you need to beat this boss, Dreadtooth, which is the same one that drops the mask. You need to beat him on 10 stacks, which he's actually pretty hard.
Yeah.
And then
so
he
that's
drops.
Like the highest level that he could be. Basically.
Correct.
Yeah.
And he drops something called the amulet. Okay. So it's like you're wearing like your Flavor Flav necklace with, instead of a clock, it's an amulet.
Okay.
I'm guessing.
Yeah. So you have to beat this boss 10 times in any difficulty.
Well, no. It's 10 stacks. So you.
Sorry. 16 times to get 16 masks.
Correct.
And then you have to beat him at his hardest difficulty once.
Yeah, so you spray this juice on him 10 times and make him pissed off. Basically, every time you put this essence on him, he gets mad.
Okay.
Anyways, so that you have to do all that just to get the amulet.
Right.
Then you have to beat the first boss in the Terra Firm Beyond operation. Then you go under this bridge... And you go see this boss called the Dreadful Entity.
That's the secret boss.
Correct.
You
so if everybody
mumbo jumbo.
Exactly. So if everybody doesn't have a mask, everybody's dead. If you don't have the amulet, everybody's dead. So
wow,
it's tricky.
Yeah.
So here's the other tricky part. If you die, you can only use the amulet once
every 24 hours.
Correct. So not only do we need. One, we need three amulets.
Right, so you can actually like have
three
shots.
Try a couple times. They said that there's a chance that you can pass the amulet to another person.
Right.
On the front end.
Yeah.
But it might like wear out, so you need three.
Yeah.
They say once you're at the boss, he's pretty easy, but you're probably going to wipe one time just because.
You don't know the mechanics of
correct.
The fight.
I don't care how many times you watch a video, you're standing stupid, you're going to die.
Right.
Anyway.
I've done that. Before, for sure.
So back to this 100 million credits. So I start talking about this. I didn't know about
this. So you didn't say that Medulla challenged you to do it. You just explained the boss.
Right. So I found out about this boss.
Yeah.
And I found out what it takes. And I'm going to do this.
Right.
Well, I know the people. Like, I will organize this. Medulla is like, there's no way you can get people to... You can't get 16 people together with the amulets to go fight this boss. He didn't say beat the boss. He said, if you can make this happen, I'll come because I have an amulet and I'll give you 100 million credits.
Wow.
I'm like,
done.
And he's like, you're not going to do it. And one of Scrubland Shad,
former
guest, awesome dude, he says, you shouldn't have challenged Marcus to this. Like, you know he's going to do this, right? Like,
yeah, especially because you host your own guild event.
Yeah.
Every month, your mega event, where you get, literally is the point is to get a bunch of people together and go fight stuff.
Right. So,
usually
Monday night, I organized 24 people to come kill this 10-stack boss
right.
to get the amulet, and they all showed up. And we had four people from four different podcasts. We had three guilds or four guilds, five guilds, whatever, of people that piled in there. And when we go do the dreadful entity, it's going to be
the secret boss.
The secret boss. We're going to have Intistar is going to be leading his new Outriders guild. Okay. Brian's going to be leading his guildies from the Bad Feeling guild, and I'm going to be leading my guys from the AIE guild. So we're going to acquire 16 people and all come together in three guilds and do like this cross guild thing. And I'm going to collect 100 million credits.
Boomba.
So.
You're like setting up the perfect storm for a Leroy Jenkins moment right now.
Just like, okay. So it's funny you should say that. So if, as you play,
Marcus
if there is
Leroy yeah, Jenkins.
If there is a Leroy Jenkins in SOTOR, I'm that guy.
Okay.
So.
Marcus is even a DPS character.
Yes. And I just. Because sometimes I just get bored standing around and whatever. Anyway, long story short is, so now I've talked about this 100 million credits.
Right.
And if we beat the boss and if Medulla actually gives me the 100 million credits, which I'm sure he will because if he doesn't, we're just going to destroy him on the podcast.
Right.
But he will. Do I distribute it all to the 16 people that we went with? Or am I greedy and keep it to myself? It's only us talking.
It's only us, and yeah, it may or may not be recorded. But I think the nice guy move is, well, aren't you an Imperial? You're on a pub? Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, you're mostly light side, so
yeah, but
light side's the right side, so the light side thing to do would be to distribute it between the 16 people. If it were me, I would keep it, because I think the dark side is the way to go. Or you should put a Twitter poll up and see what people say. Don't do it now, because I'd like to continue talking.
No, so... 100 million credits.
Divided by 16.
It's only 6 million credits per person. Like,
that's not that big of a reward.
Well, for me. Anyway, so I'm rambling. Anyway, so the challenge is on.
Leave it at that.
I'm going to fucking do it. So this Monday, we're going to go back and do Dreadtooth again, 10 stacks, to get another amulet. That means we have three.
Okay.
And then the following Thursday... Or the following Monday, I'm not really sure how it's going to work.
Yeah.
We're going to go do the Dreadful Entity and
sweet
win. Last week, Friday night, we did our mega event for the guild.
What does it stand for again?
Monthly Epic Guild Activity.
Yep.
I host one once a month. This time we did Guild PvP. It was epic, no pun intended. Basically, we went to a couple PvP maps, introduced people who don't usually do PvP to, like, the way the maps work, where the traps are, and all this stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
And so there's two goals whenever we do this, is to have fun and, like, do a PvP match, but then kill Max. John, Max is our guild master, and anytime we're in PvP, I just tell everybody to kill him because it's fun to watch him die.
It's the running joke.
Yes. So this by this weekend, I'll have the April Megas date figured out, whatever. Death Star Troopers. We went back to Dread Fortress hard mode. We beat Grobfuck, which was great. It was the end of the night. And I'm so excited to say this. I'm 85.6% positive that I filled the DPS role.
Wow.
That we've had.
Wow. And, oh, the open DPS role?
The open DPS role. And I know the guy coming will bring the pain. So
sweet.
And he's a former guest, which means it's going to be even better once I announce it, because we'll have to have him back on to talk about
his new role in Death Star Troopers.
So hopefully by the end of, by the next episode, which will be in a couple weeks, I'll make that announcement. Last thing is, get ready, people. Next Friday and Saturday
and Sunday for me.
Well, I'm going Thursday.
Oh.
So over the course of 4 days, Working Class Nerds will be in full effect at PAX East in Boston.
We'll be taking over.
Right. And if you are going to be in the Boston area on Friday night, we're doing an AIE /SOTOR/podcast meetup. We're all going to do dinner and drinks with a bunch of people. in the city. So if you're there, you can find me on Twitter. I am at MarcusB814.
And I am at Nick Vern. That's N-I-C-K-V-E-R-N. Did we forget to read that in the beginning?
You didn't put it in from the...
Oh, the template.
Yeah, you used an old template, not the new template.
Right.
Anyway, so that's that. A couple little things from SOTOR news. The new game update is coming.
Would you like me to read the message from...
No. Okay. 5.10. I really want to hear about...
Game of Thrones?
Yeah, that's the name of the show.
Oh, my God.
So,
kidding me?
My soul is crushed.
I know.
Well, maybe you guys are going to... maybe after this conversation, you guys are going to persuade me to get hungry to listen to it.
Dude, you need to watch it?
You're persuading me to get hungry about SOTOR, for sure.
Well, all right. So, as far as I understand, John, you used to play MMOs, right?
Yeah.
I did. So, this is actually, like, bringing back a lot of memories, and I don't know if they're memories I want to come back. Like,
why not?
I'm getting the anxiety and, like, the, ooh, I should just do a little Google search about this and... See what it's all
just
about.
Just dip your toe in and then...
So,
and
you
then
can get in and it's free to join. You can play for free. There's a limit on credits, but you don't need that to start. And you can pick any character you want. You can do all the base class stories. The one thing I would say is pay $5 and buy $5 worth of cartel coins and unlock something on the thing. You spend $5, but then you get all of the content up to today. With that $5 purchase.
Right.
And you get, I think you get to carry like a million credits, which is enough.
So where is this game at in its life cycle?
So we're in year 7.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's going to be a big announcement at Star Wars Celebration, which is happening in 2 weeks. And I think they're going to announce 6.0.
Which is like, would be a new expansion.
Right.
Okay.
We just got the planet Osis, which is... a planet from the old Knights of the Old Republic comic books from the early 2000s. And that's where the story has brought us. The game's great right now.
If you like lightsabers, I would definitely play
this
game.
Well, if you're an MMO guy, because Nick isn't really an MMO guy.
Right.
He's more of a
story-driven...
Well, like a Skyrim, where Skyrim is pretty much an MMO, except you're not surrounded by people everywhere.
Right. I like an RPG. I just don't... I have a tough time getting into an MMORPG, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
So I'm totally an MMORPG person, but I shouldn't be because those types of games just completely take over my life.
Well, you just said how, you know, before the show, you were just talking about how you're getting much better at, you know, keeping your work at work, and you don't, it's, you know, your grading isn't cutting into personal time. See, now you have these larger chunks of personal time available for an MMO.
Yes, now that I've balanced... Work-life balance. I have a lot more life to give up to something else, I suppose.
Well, you know, well, either way, John, if you want to play...
you've come to the right show.
Yeah, you've got... And I'll send you... Just remember Starforge server, because if you join the Starforge server, I'll get you into the guild, even if you don't stay for long, but at least you'll get an XP bonus from being in our guild. And, you know, just play at your own pace and have some fun, because BioWare... is probably one of the best storytelling developers there are.
Yeah.
And the stories are incredible. Like, Nick played the Sith
Warrior
story, and he loved it.
That's great. It was fantastic.
And
so what brought you to this game? Was it, are you a Star Wars fan, or do you just play MMOs, or like, what's the angle here?
Marcus is the biggest Star Wars fan I've ever met in my entire life by... an enormous margin.
Oh, no shit. Okay.
There are 4 different pieces of custom Star Wars artwork on the walls up here, and I know he definitely has more hanging elsewhere.
Well, yeah, it's because my office isn't...
in fully operational.
Once the he shed is done, that's when it'll all be in there. But anyway, nothing. So I played this game. I bought the collector's edition because I thought it was the coolest thing in the world back in 2011.
When it came out.
When it came out, and I... played it for about a week, and I was like, MMOs are dumb. Like, why would I ever play this when I can play Call of Duty? But one day, we were about to have our baby, and I was looking for
first baby.
Yeah, first baby. And I pulled out a box, and there was a collector's edition with the Darth Malgus statue, and I was like, you know, I should try this game.
Yeah.
So I downloaded the game, and I got hooked. And so I would just play it, and I would just be playing the class story, and I didn't do any of the group content for years. And then I started doing that, and it's taken me to today.
Right. But it's, you're in a guild, you run your own raid team.
Yeah.
Two of them, actually.
Yeah. And now I would just say to you is, give it a try. Like, it's a fun game, and it's free. That's the thing about games now, is if you have to pay for a game now, like, you should really want to play it. Like, Nick bought Red Dead Redemption 2,
yeah,
and he really wanted to play that game.
And I certainly did.
Well, yeah, you played right. The shit out of it.
Right.
But you got your $60 worth out of that.
Yeah, Spider-Man 2, same deal.
Exactly.
I played a ton of that.
But you can play Star Wars and do the class stories and never worry about, who cares about money?
Right.
You don't need to unlock everything if you're just doing the class stories.
Right.
You can just enjoy the game, and the story's awesome. So, enough about that.
Awesome. I'm convinced.
SOTOR.com. And I can get you a referral link, because one of my... favorite streamers, actually, right now, Kogus, he was a guest on the show. He can get you 7 days of free sub time if you do use his referral link. But anyway, so they put the Guild Heraldry update on the PTS. It's pretty cool. You're going to be able to make your guild logo. They say that you're not going to be able to make cock and balls. You're only going to be able to make a lightsaber stick. So people like Brian from The Bad Feeling, I'm sure, is like devastated by that.
Right.
And I guarantee you he's going to try to find a way to make a lightsaber with balls. I'm sure he will.
Yeah. So for context, John, they added recently in this game update guild like emblems, basically. Yeah. It's kind of like in Call of Duty how you could have like an emblem, but this will be for your guild. So, of course, the first thing people thought of is, like, how do I creatively draw a penis on here?
So
get through that filter, yeah.
Right. And then on March 19th, they gave us, they called the article Under the Hood with SOTOR. And they pulled back the curtain a little bit on, you know, the process of what they're doing and stuff. But the one thing I want to mention, they said they're updating their DYNs, which I'm a nerd and I don't really understand what that means. I think it's something to do with the lighting in the game.
Okay.
But the biggest thing is they're updating the preview window. So when you got the new armor and you pressed control C,
yeah,
and like it pulls up your thing. Now it's like updated and you can pull out your lightsabers and actually like see your armor shine or your color crystal.
Oh, and see it like move around a little.
Right.
More.
So it's like they're bringing a 2011 game to 2019
right.
level.
Right.
So other than that, and go to SOTOR.com if you want to read the article, because we're not going to do that. Oh. But I will say this. I cannot wait
what?
To hear about the dragons and how the winter is coming. And
is that all of your Game of Thrones knowledge right there?
No, wait, isn't there, like, zombies?
Basically what you got from the Bud Light commercial in the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, so, no, there's... But isn't there, like... I can't wait, because I have one... We're going to do this, because I know Nick has to pee.
Yeah.
I
want to do the... give a quick plug for AIE, too. I forgot to put it in the show notes.
Oh, yes.
Hey, so if all this SOTOR stuff sounds fun to you... Or any games sound fun to you, go to AIE-guild.org and get our Discord info. Jump into the SOTOR or whatever channel, whatever game you're looking for. Ask for a guild invite. An officer will get you in, and you can come play with me or Marcus or maybe John eventually, too.
Maybe.
What? No, it's not a maybe. It's a definite. He's already downloading the game right now.
Yeah, I can hear the audio quality.
My bandwidth's shit out.
So, Nick, tuck this in the back of your head. Is it really true there's zombies that live in an ice castle? We'll be right back. And we're back. Today we're going to be talking about... Wait. Today, Nick and John are going to be talking about their predictions and anticipations for the upcoming final season of Game of Thrones, where every episode is 500 minutes, and it's going to be battle scenes and death and incest and boobies. Anyway, and we're also going to talk to John a little bit about the old days of EverQuest and the old MMOs.
So, without further ado... I know you haven't really been into them super recently, but I know you were in, like, I think high school, you said, maybe? Or, like, early 2000s,
even before,
roughly?
It was, like, late middle school. So I actually had to look this up to get the timeline straight. So EverQuest actually, it came out in 1997, I think.
Okay.
Was like, when the beta started. So, yeah, this would have put me at, like, 11 years old when I first started playing MMOs. So during some very formative years.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the reason why I grew up to be a nerd. I don't know.
it certainly pushed you down that path a little
and
bit.
And just so you know, EverQuest just turned 20, yeah. And they're releasing their 20th expansion this year.
Wow.
Which is so crazy that they're still finding like new reasons to make more content. I mean, because The gameplay was fairly repetitive, actually.
Well, most MMOs are repetitive. You go, you get your quest, you're going to go talk to this guy, and then you're going to go kill 10 things, and then you're going to return the quest, then you're going to go pick up 10 things, and then you're going to return the quest, and then there's going to be a little bit of dialogue that says, hey, I'm going to be a traitor, and then you go kill 10 more things, and oh, we got to kill a boss, and it cycles through. That I think that is the basis of an MMO, and that's why it's never ending.
Right.
Do you guys use the term mob in SOTOR?
Yes.
How do you describe that? Mob is good.
Mob or trash.
Like, yeah. So like in EverQuest, and even actually in World of Warcraft, it was getting so bad that like the new content was like the same character models and artwork, and they would just make them different colors.
So
they would release a new expansion, and like, you know, now the mob would have like darker flesh tones instead of lighter flesh tones, or they'd have like red armor instead of blue armor.
Sure. Well, I think for the most part, there's only so much money and so much
resources.
Development time.
Yeah.
You know,
sorry.
When a game comes out, you know, that's the height of the development team. So when EverQuest or SOTOR or World of Warcraft came out, let's say there was 1,000 employees making the game.
Right.
But as the game gets older, the development team gets smaller, so there's only so much they can do for NPCs or mobs or trash, whatever you want to call them. And, you know, when they give a color change, sure, you know, it seems weak, but it's only so much they can do. Now, with EverQuest, is why not come out with another expansion? The game has paid for itself over and over, so at this point, whoever's playing EverQuest is paid for this game for years, and how hard is it to make an expansion of a game that old?
Right.
You know, just throw out some new content, and people are happy, and they play it.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, one of the big differences between EverQuest and it sounds like SOTOR is that, like, in EverQuest, there was no such thing as being a casual gamer. I mean, there was almost no point in even playing the game if you couldn't invest it at least 4 or 5 hours a day. But, I mean, you know, most people, I would say, were actually playing, like, much, much more than that.
Wow.
Like, in our guild, we actually had minimums. Like, you had to play from 7 p.m. Eastern time until 3 a.m. Eastern time. And that was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then we used to raid during the week until midnight Eastern time.
Wow.
Oh. So it's like super intense. I mean, like life-ruining time commitments. But it's because the advancement system, like, there was no such... It's kind of ironic, right? Because there was no actual questing in EverQuest. The quests were a joke, so it was all just grinding, grinding, grinding. You know, killing NPCs and getting experience and then leveling up. But there were 50 and then eventually 60 and like who knows how many levels they have now, but
sure,
like each level could easily, you know, take you like 20, 30 hours of gameplay or more as you got up in levels.
Wow.
Well, I think the big difference from then and now is it's a different world, right? People now are busier than ever.
Right.
You know, and so these MMOs, and I think part of the reason this is why the MMO genre as a whole has been declining is because, you know, people can't invest that much time where people can play Apex Legends
for like, or, you know, 20 minutes and then leave.
Exactly. Yeah. They get their fix and I only have time to play one match because I got to take Johnny to soccer practice or whatever it is.
Yeah.
People aren't investing that time. Now, the college kids or the teenagers or whoever are playing
the
most.
The 11-year-olds.
Right, but it's just a different world. They don't want to spend hours and hours and hours grinding like you used to, like you're talking about in EverQuest, right. where I think the MMO model has changed in that way in right. the newer games. You know, even WoW's grind. The WoW's grind is nothing like what it used to be. And WoW's coming out with their new vanilla server. I don't know when it's coming, but it's coming soon. And it's going to be original WoW with updated graphics. So,
oh, really? Because that there are still like some legacy servers that exist off of
correct
Blizzard servers that they're trying to shut down or, you know, people play. You right. guys probably know that. But
well, they did shut it down, but then they brought them back because, you know, the community was like, you can't do this. Like, you've allowed it for all these years, but now because you're not making money on these servers, you want to ban them? No. And, you know, this is where, in 2019, community really matters to these games.
Right.
Because, you know, look what they did to Battlefront 2. Like, the community killed that game.
Right.
Now you can get it for $5.99, and the game is unbelievable.
Yeah, it looks fantastic.
And it plays fantastic.
Right. It's just a little tricky to get Darth Vader unlocked now, that's all.
Well, right. You know, but that's the checks and balances of it. They're only charging you $5 for the game, but you're going to work really, really hard to get Darth Vader.
Right.
You know.
But don't you think that, like, that's part... I mean, see, I feel like that time commitment and investment is part of the reason why MMOs took off as a genre of game. I mean, if you know, the advantage to having to invest all of that time is that you actually are super invested in the game and, I mean, in the ecosystem. I used to, like, live, you know, and breathe EverQuest, and I think most of the people in my guild were actually much older. Like, when I was playing EverQuest, I was only, like, around 13, and I used to have to lie about my age because, like, people in my guild were all in their 30s. You know, right. we were, like, playing on dial-up. Like, you know, everything was organized through message boards, so it was, like, before cell phones and texting and stuff were big, and because we were playing on dial-up, the bandwidth sucked. So.
Right. But you're explaining everything that's different from today. I mean, how many times a day does, you know, so somebody take a selfie of themselves and they tweak the camera and post pictures 5 times a day? You know right. what I mean? And that's the content is constantly coming out. Or, you know, you go to social medias, that consumes the world.
Right.
Where now right. content is coming so, so fast. You know, Nick announces that he's going to release a game to one guy. By the time Nick walks out of the door out of that office from that interview, the whole world knows.
Right.
And he's
right.
already being interviewed for it. So I think just the content
right.
is different now.
Yeah, so now people don't have as much other stuff going on, so they can sink, you know, wholeheartedly into
right.
in EverQuest or something like that. But I think you can get a similar commitment with modern, like, time frames and time constraints to where, like, I know Marcus doesn't spend nearly that much time. I think that's a little bonkers, you know, by today's standards now. But Marcus is totally engrossed in SOTOR all the time, and lots of guildies are. I would like to be, but I just don't have that much time. But I think you can get that much fulfillment and that much attachment to a game today without having to spend quite so much time in it, if that makes sense. Like, you can engross yourself on, you know, 3 hours twice a week or something, or, you know, and then maybe like an hour or two every day or something like that, or if you want to just play casually and then right. and then go raid, you know, once a week or twice a week or something like that.
I play almost every night at 9 o'clock at night to 11 or 12.
Yeah,
that's just in I would say I
so
probably
that's
don't...
a very reasonable that's a reasonable time commitment for sure,
right? Yeah. And that's all they well, our guild, you know, I don't know what other guilds do, because, you know, but it's really the social aspect of it is huge. And where you were talking about, like, message boards and stuff like that.
Yeah,
now we have, like, Discord where, you know, there's constant chatter, but it's just another social media source.
Yeah.
But for your direct guild. And there's, you know, you're just typing updates throughout the day. And it works really, really well.
Yeah.
Where back right. then, it was forums. I remember the paintball forums.
I know. I had Air Sports. Yeah. Or
so, like, doing paintball forums to say, oh, I'll be there on Thursday. But that was before social media took over.
Right. Right.
And it's just, I would say it's even websites. You know, when was the last time you went to a website and read an article from the website unless you were prompted on some social media site?
Right. Or it was right. like, or I was doing something for school.
Well, yeah, school is different. School, yeah. you can't, you can't compare school to like
just social life.
Yeah, social life.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
100%. Yeah, like, for socially speaking, let's
your professor here is being a jerk and he's making you look something up about neurobiology and whatever And you know,
God forbid, write a couple articles.
Yeah, write an article, and you're like, how am I going to find this? Okay, you have to search that.
Yeah.
But you can just go to YouTube and watch a review Bollock Gaming and see a review on a game, and you're like, oh, I'll get my own opinion from this.
Yeah.
Rather than go to the PCGamer.com and read their 50-page article about the game. Like, who has time for that?
Right.
Unless you're pooping.
I just feel like it cheapens the experience. I mean, I don't know. The social aspect of the game and the fact that it was kind of a struggle to make it work, I think, was part of the appeal, like, at least for the people that could hack it and invest the time.
Right.
I mean, and because of, like, all the lawsuits, like, you guys maybe remember, like, the reason why EverQuest is popular is because Sony got sued. There was, like, this famous suicide case. Someone had, like, something happened to their character in the game, and like it got deleted, and they ended up committing suicide, and it you know, there started all these news articles about like video game addiction, and there was a huge market for like people selling their accounts on eBay.
Oh right,
which,
yeah.
By the way, I was one of those people. I sold my account for like $600, which was big bucks to 15-year-old me.
Hell
back
yeah.
in the day. But I feel like, you know, like those things couldn't really have existed now, yes. like in this time, and right. it, you know, there's something to be said for like, you know, having some random, like, you know, 40-year-old guy calling your house and like having your mom answer the phone and him being like, you know, can you tell John to get on because we're raiding now, like, you know, like no, that's never going to happen anymore because now it'd just be like, you know, text or whatever,
yes.
or Kick or whatever, WhatsApp, whatever it is. Everyone's using to kind of communicate.
I don't even know what those are.
Yeah.
No?
Come
on. Well, whatever people are using now.
Yeah.
You know?
I know what they are.
Mark. Well, I don't.
It's a dinosaur.
I'm 36 and I'm a carpenter. I don't have a clue.
So you could have played EverQuest with me. I'm 32.
Yeah.
So I think Marcus is just was skateboarding at the time or something.
Exactly. But John, what I'm trying to say is just nowadays it's different. And for me, I have children. I have a wife. So my game time is after the kids go to bed, I go downstairs and turn on my supercomputer.
Right. And it is a supercomputer.
And enjoy my couple hours of content. And I'm completely satisfied with that. And I talk myself into playing all these new games all the time. But I don't want to play these other games. You know, there's a new game, The Division 2. I was this close to buying it. I didn't buy it because I really want to play it.
But you're going to play it like twice or three times.
And I'm not even going to dive into it. And I'm like, nope. So I'm not going to buy it.
Right.
Right.
And that's where like the Mortal Kombat's come in, because that's an easy, a quick fix for something different and then go back. But nowadays, you know, it's hard to say because the subscription model has gone away.
Right.
And, you know, I pay a subscription fee and I don't mind because I play a lot of the game, but I can understand people who are like, I've never played it. They play it for a little while for free, and then they realize they hit the roadblocks of the free-to-play, and they may stop playing because they're like, I don't want to pay $15 a month because I also want to play The Division 2. I also want to play Red Dead Redemption.
Right. You also want to play other games.
Right.
Yeah,
for me, the $15 a month is actually cheap.
Because that's all you really play.
That's all I play.
Right.
So my consumption of video games is that subscription fee, where other people, you know, if I was paying $15 a month and paying $60 every other month for a Spider-Man or something like that, then I could see the pinch of the $15 a month because I'd be like, why am I paying this?
Right. Right.
You know?
Right. Especially if it's your mom's credit card.
I wish. That's a great idea.
Wow.
I should say, hey Ma, remember you said you were going to buy me that, and then in the process just set it up for auto pay?
Think of all the money I saved you between 1997 and 2001 by skipping EverQuest and WoW.
Yeah. That's awesome. Exactly. So either way, I think the new age MMO and the developers know that there's going to be your hardcore people who play it.
Right.
Really, the biggest MMOs right now are Elder Scrolls Online, SOTOR, Star Trek Online. Obviously, World of Warcraft is the biggest. And there's some other ones.
Is it really still a... That's
it's
surprising.
Huge, man.
100%.
The AIE Guild still has, you know, like 5,000 active members that log in every... Like once a week.
Wow.
Well, you know... Okay, John, I'm going to bring it to nostalgia, maybe.
Yeah.
So you played EverQuest.
Yep.
And you committed 10 years of your life to that game. You're going to keep playing that game because you've invested so much of your life into it. So when the expansion comes out, you do the expansion content, and then you stop playing. But most likely, you're going to keep your subscription going.
Right. Just because you wanted to hop into the expansion it comes out.
And I believe it, and I'm living it right now. Like, I'm so invested into SOTOR that I don't want to stop playing it. So when the new content comes out, I can't wait to play it.
Right.
Right. I mean, I think the other thing, too, related to that is how they, like, just this weekend, for example, I got an email that, you know, if you want to come back for the weekend to World of Warcraft, like, it's free. So I think, like, the big gaming houses are really capitalizing on that nostalgia. You know, because, I mean, I have to admit, like, I've tried to play World of Warcraft again over the past couple of years. And, I mean, it's just not the same anymore. Like, the magic of the game is kind of gone now. Right. Maybe I'll, you know, but now that you said they're doing the vanilla server, I'll definitely go back and check that out and see if that does it. But, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and that's why I say, but on the flip side, if you've already played WoW, give a different one a try. You know, Elder Scrolls Online is really good. I'm not really into...
Like the Skyrim universe.
Well, no, medieval.
Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, I'm more of a sci-fi guy.
Yeah.
And I kind of like Star Wars, so...
You kind of like Star Wars?
Yeah. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, but...
Dude, you have...
I know.
I can't even articulate.
I'm just saying, like, for me, Star Wars MMO is everything I could ever want in an MMO.
Yeah.
So there was another failed Star Wars MMO.
Yeah, Galaxies.
Was it Galaxies? It came out right around the time of World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I played that one for a while, but I couldn't get into that.
Well, that was an open-ended MMORPG, like Sandbox. Like, if you wanted to be a blacksmith, that was your career. You could be a Twi'lek dancer, a stripper. Like, that could be your job, and that's all you do in the game. So, I think there were no quests. You created your own quests.
Yeah. Kind of like, what's that game?
Legends of Aria.
Thank you, Legends of Aria.
Derek Brinkman's game.
Yes.
So, it's... And the Ultimas Online and stuff like that. But, that game shut down because the developers changed something. The community didn't like it, and they were just like, see you later.
Right.
Then they announced SOTOR, and they shut down the game.
Right.
But you can still play that game. There's, you know, and that's the thing about an MMO now, is even if a game is dead, you give somebody 2 years, somebody's going to find a way to make that game run again.
Right.
Right.
It's interesting.
Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, no. So I mean, in SOTOR, are there, like, penalties? Like, is the game big into... like punishing like deaths or setbacks? I remember, like, in EverQuest, like, you would, like I said, spend, you know, literally months in some cases leveling up, and then maybe just because of the way the game was structured, like you could actually lose like 3, 4, or 5 levels in a night just because you get into like this death loop. And I think one of the transitions that, like, even WoW made to allow casual gaming is they started to penalize, like, deaths more. And so you could basically just keep building and building and never really have those big setbacks.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's absolutely true. So the SOTOR story is basically you're playing a game on, like, easy mode.
Yeah.
Because they want you to enjoy the story content, and they want you to continue to play it. And it kind of kicks you in the ass because... when you go from beating the class story and you're ready to do that next thing, the end game stuff, you didn't, like, the content wasn't hard enough to where you learned all your abilities
right.
during that class story. So it actually hinders you for, like, the end game.
Right.
But I understand why they do it, because they want people to enjoy their game, so they play the game.
Right.
And if they make it super hard, people are going to play it for a day and be like, I am not playing a fucking game. I'm going to die 10 times in a night in 2019 for a 7-year-old game.
Right.
Right.
So it's kind of, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that transition from purely story content into endgame sort of group content
right.
can be a little tricky. Like, for me, thank God I had Dent to give me, like, the move rotation. So you have, like, you know, different attacks, basically, that you put on your number keys, or I did anyway. Most people do, I think. So you'd have, like, 1, 2, 3, with, you know, different moves queued up, basically. So Dent, one of our former podcast guests, our master set of movie reviews, and, yeah, Gildy showed me what he was using for his class character that I had the same, you know, class.
Yes.
So I was using that move set during story mode. So then I didn't, when Marcus chucked me into an end game level operation or, you know, which is like a raid.
Right.
I actually knew what the heck I was doing, but figuring that out on my own would be terrible for sure.
Right. Either way. Any other questions?
Nope, I'm good. I'm feeling ready to talk about Game of Thrones, actually.
All right, let's do it.
So since I'm going to be the narrator here because I don't know what they're talking about.
That was the first thing I was going to say.
So I'm going to insert here, spoilers!
Yes.
Spoilers!
Yeah, so if you caught up.
Yeah, well, if you've never heard of Game of Thrones or anything, turn off the show because if you ever watch it, it's going to be spoiled.
Yeah, and there's a lot of giant spoilers, so... thank you for listening, but you don't have to. Don't tune in if you're never going to watch Game of Thrones.
All right, so I got a question.
Yeah.
Before we jump into this, let's clarify how much A Song of Ice and Fire content we've consumed.
That's when Marcus reads Nick's notes.
I have no idea what that means.
So A Song of Ice and Fire is the title of the book series, and that's technically like the series title. And the first book, it's A Song of Ice and Fire,
Game of Thrones.
A Game of Thrones, yeah. That's okay. The first book in the series.
Okay.
So when they made the show, they just called it Game of Thrones.
Sure. Okay.
So for me, I've seen every season of Game of Thrones so far, and I've read the books, or, you know, I listened to them on Audible. Through A Feast for Crows, which is the fourth book out of the five that are published so far. And I also frequently listen to a Game of Thrones podcast called A Storm of Spoilers, which is where I primarily get my, like, off-season updates and, you know, production news and stuff like that from. Marcus has seen and listened to nothing, as far as I know.
I've seen the head get chopped off.
Oh, so that's
season one.
So that's season one, end of
yeah.
season one.
Yeah, so yeah. It was just, I was with a bunch of people, and they were watching. I'm like, what are you guys watching? And they're like, just wait. And the guy's head gets chopped off. I was like, wow, that was brutal. And then we went out for the night drinking.
Oh.
So anyway. So,
John, what have you consumed?
So I started reading the books in, like, the mid-2000s. I finished all the books that were available. So I was super pumped when they announced that they were doing the show, although, like, most of the book-to-movie fantasy shows were pretty terrible.
Yeah.
So I was cautiously optimistic, but obviously ended up totally loving the show. Whether I love it more or less than the books, I don't know. At this point, I kind of just see them as, like, two things that are happening in parallel.
Yeah, that's...
but I've done the audiobook thing to do my rereads, and right now I'm in the middle of a rewatch of the show, and I am in just finishing season two, actually.
Very nice.
I try to avoid spoilers myself. So in previous seasons, I used to spend way, way, way too much time on Reddit. So like my go-to was like I would watch the episode. I would go on Reddit and let everybody tell me stuff that I missed, and then I would go back and watch the episode again.
That is verbatim my watching.
But I'm trying not to do that now.
Yeah. They're like, oh, it's the XYZ is totally going to happen by the end of the season because of this foreshadowing. And I'm like, how the fuck did you even think to figure that out?
No, it's total bullshit. And plus, for the last one, the script leaked.
Oh,
and
right.
So the threads were just totally contaminated with spoilers, you know, like I'm all for people speculating, and I love when people pull obscure stuff from the books that ends up being right, but I hate when, dogs are super excited too about Game of Thrones, by the way.
That's okay. Hello, dogs. But yeah, same here. I got spoiled for some stuff for sure. But so what are you most looking forward to, generally speaking, from season 8? It doesn't have to be one thing. It could be, you know, a handful or whatever.
But I'm just so excited in general. Like, I don't even know how to answer that question. Like, I'm actually thinking about getting a Game of Thrones tattoo to like celebrate the eighth season, but also the ending of the show. But yeah. The problem is, like, I don't know what to get because I feel like depending on how the show ends, like, what I get could be like totally the opposite of what I want. Like, if I could love this thing now, and maybe by the end of the show, it's going to be completely terrible.
Right. Oh, you could. Ooh. So, in some spoiler-y-ness, this isn't too bad, but there's a rumor going around that there's going to be a conjoined Stark Targaryen sigil. So maybe if that actually becomes a thing, that could be a cool tattoo. Yeah.
That would be super cool, actually. I've seen some fan art of that, like, from previous seasons, but...
Right. That would be really cool. Awesome.
And right now, I was thinking, like, maybe, like, a three-eyed raven, because birds are always pretty cool for tattoos. And the other thing is the sigil for the Hand of the King, I think, is pretty cool, too. I don't know where I would put that, because I feel like it's kind of douchey to put it, like, as a chess piece.
Right.
But, like, if you put it on your arm, then it doesn't really follow with the show. So, not sure.
Right. Yeah.
But, no, as far as things I'm excited for, I guess I'm really excited to see the order of events. Like, I just really want to see how things come together, right? Like, do they address the question of the Great War with the Night King first? Or are they going to try to resolve, like, this war for the Iron Throne that's been taking place more so over the past seven seasons?
Yeah. I can answer that kind of, sort of, speculatively. Semi-speculative? I don't know if you want me to tell you. The word on the street is there's a specific episode in which the big battle takes place. So, like, you can assume the battle for Winterfell.
The Battle of Winterfell.
Right. So, the word on the street is it's going to take place in episode 3 of the 6. Which is surprising to me, because that's not one of the crazy long ones. I don't know if you saw, somebody posted on Reddit a while ago, the episode length. I can pull up the photo on my phone while I'm sort of filibustering here.
Actually, I know it's like 54, 58, 70-something, 80-something,
right.
90-something.
And then 90, yeah. So the first three episodes are more or less normal length, and then the last three are the actually really long ones. So that was interesting to me, because that means if episode 3 is where the Battle of Winterfell is, and that's the, you know, rumored, you know, longest battle in cinematography history, basically. That means
longer than the Battle of Helm's Deep.
Right, which is pretty awesome. And it's the same director, no?
Or they actually.
It's the same director from the episode where the Battle of the Bastards took place, but they referenced the Battle of Helm's Deep and how to shoot such a long battle scene. Which is really cool. So they, like, sort of almost modeled it after that.
That was such an awesome battle.
Yeah. So that's what episode 3 is going to be like. I'm assuming it's basically going to be the whole episode.
Do they name their episodes, like, episode 3, Revenge of the Sith?
Yeah. There's a title to each one?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there's usually a clever title that ties in more with the books. Like a casual TV watcher wouldn't necessarily know what the title had, like, what the symbolism was for the title.
Sure. Right. Like, the episode with the Red Wedding was titled, like, The Reigns of Castamere. Right.
Yep.
Which is cool. So for me, I'm looking forward to, like, some plot point stuff. I'm really looking forward to, like, finally Jon learning that he's a Targaryen, and that realization coming with, like, you know, multi-tiered emotions, because he's going to start to understand how much, like, Ned sacrificed to keep that secret, and the, you know, transition into being him horrified that he's been banging Dany this whole time, who's his aunt.
Right.
So, like, he's going to be like, I don't know what he's going to realize first and what, like, emotions are going to come across, or how that's going to that whole thing's going to play out. But, you know, that's been a big build-up.
That total cringeworthy scene, right? Like, where John's banging Dany, and then, like, that's, like, the exact moment, like, where you realize that, that, you know, he's actually a Targaryen.
Right. That whole scene was interesting, because you have that tension, and, like, there's some, like, weird, like, Tyrion has a crush on Dany stuff going on before, and then he's, like, outside the room and realizes it's happening, and it's like, oh, that's awkward, it's like, what are you doing there? And then, at the same time, it's all
super hard to read.
Yeah, there was a lot. That was very complicated.
I want to just jump back to one thing that you said. So with the Battle of Winterfell, that's supposed to be episode 3.
Yes.
I mean, are you saying that you think that conflict is going to be resolved in that episode?
No. So, okay. I think... I don't think fully. The speculation I heard is someone else said that they don't think the Night King's going to be killed in that battle, and I kind of agree, especially because the last three episodes are so long. So I think, if I had to guess, now I have no other info, this is just me spitballing, I think they're going to mostly subdue that army, or their army's going to totally win, and they're going to march further south or something, and they'll be like
which is what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, so I think the living are probably going to lose or something and somehow retreat. I don't know how the heck they would get away from that giant army enough to, like, get out in front of them. But if I had to guess, they're probably the Army of the Dead's going to win, and they're going to have to march south, and then they're going to have to join forces with, the Cersei's forces or the Golden Army or whatever. I'm not sure how that's going to play out, but I don't think it's going to get resolved in episode 3, if I had to guess. Because just purely because I don't think having those last three episodes be so long is only going to be politics. Between, right. Like, the other factions. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, there's that prophecy that Dany has in the House of Undying, where she sees Snow on the Iron Throne.
Right.
And so, since the show is pretty big on prophecies, to me, that means that the army has to get to King's Landing.
Right. That's a good point, too.
So, I'll be really... But the weird thing is, the show got so much criticism in Season 7 for, like, travel time and just passage of time in general. I'm really curious to see how, like you said, if they have to retreat, what that actually looks like and whether or not it's realistic. Because, like, we already know that the Night King's army moves way faster, at least in the battle scenes, right? They run super fast compared to everybody else.
Right.
So it seems like it would be impossible to outrun them.
Right. I don't think they're going to adjust the time. I think with it only being 6 episodes, they're going to just throw that whole, like, realistic travel thing out the window. I think it's, basically be getting worse and worse as the series goes on. Right. Especially with, like, the ravens. It's like, how the heck is a raven going to fly back and forth that fast to get messages, like, last season in particular? But, so I don't think that's going to be a big issue. But what I wanted to ask was, so obviously, some of the main characters that we know and love are going to die this season. That's, like a staple of Game of Thrones. But, particularly main characters, they're not going to let us have our totally happy ending. At least I don't think so. So what are some of, like, the sort of second tier or, like, supporting characters that you think are really going to hurt to see die? Like, earlier for me, I think Hodor was one of the worst ones,
Question to answer. Yeah.
You don't have to give one. Maybe you could give, like, a top handful or something.
So, like, for me, I feel like actually for most shows that have ensemble casts, like, I feel like the supporting characters are actually what makes the show.
Yeah.
So I almost feel, like, I'm going to get more torn up over watching some of them die than I will the main cast. Like, I'm probably the only person in the world that doesn't like Jon Snow or Dany.
Yeah.
But supporting characters, like, for me, like, Gilly, like, if anything happens to Sam and Gilly, like, I'm done. Like, I'm calling out the next day. It's gonna be like a day drinking day.
It was funny you say that, because I had written down someone else. I'll get to that in a second in the notes. But as I was reading the question, I'm like, man, I think I'd be heartbroken if Sam died. That'd be awful. Because I feel bad because of, like, the non-fightery characters. Like, if a Jon Snow dies in battle or something, it's like, okay, he got bested. But, Sam is like, he's just trying to help people, man. Like, don't pick on poor Sam or Gilly,
Right. The only thing that Sam has going for him is that he has the Valyrian steel sword, right? A Heartsbane or whatever, so...
Yeah.
That means that maybe he'll do okay. Or maybe he'll have, like, a moment of badassness like he did in one of the earlier seasons where he actually gets to kill some of the White Walkers. Who knows?
Right, yeah. Maybe all that training at the Castle Black will finally actually, like, show through or something.
The other two, probably Bronn and Tormund.
Yeah.
I think, too, and for with them, it's more like because... It means that all the fun in the show is over. Once they start killing, like, those people, like, you just know that it's going to be, like, a gut punch for the next couple. Like, how do you ever come back from watching those people die?
Yeah. Those are, like, your comic relief characters.
Right.
And yeah. Same thing with, like, a Tyrion. Well, Tyrion's a main character, so he doesn't quite fit the question, but same deal. You're going to lose a lot of, comic relief and frivolity, sort of. I don't know if that's a word, right. But...
Go ahead. No, to say, are there any characters that, like, you don't care if they die? Maybe that's the better question.
Yeah.
It's the shorter list.
I don't... I wouldn't particularly care if Brienne died. I don't know why. I just never resonated with her a whole lot. I've grown more to, well, he's a main character now, but I was going to say, or he is a main character. I was going to say Jaime. I sort of been attached to, but I don't know if I would care too much if he died. I think I'm like,
I think Jaime's done. I'm going to put money on it that Jaime's going to die.
Yeah, me too. Especially like, there's gotta be more crappy things that happen to Cersei, you know?
Right.
And I have speculation on another one, that we'll talk about when we hit the trailer. But I was going to say Jorah Mormont dying would be pretty crushing. Cause I like Jorah. I've been, like, dreading him dying since we saw him get grayscale. And then him, like, getting cured by Sam was sort of, like, a tease. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, flip-flopping back and forth with my emotions there. Because I don't think he's going to stick around. I think he's going to tragically die in front of Dany or something. I feel like there's going to be a lot of sorrow and motivation for characters to, like, pick themselves up by their bootstraps. Especially in that Battle of Winterfell. There's going to be a lot of people dying in that episode, I think.
If I had to guess. I mean, even the Grey Worm in Missandei, I like that. So those characters, Grey Worm exists, but like that whole romance doesn't exist yet in the books.
Right.
I mean, so if it's like a four TV only relationship, I mean, you have to think that the only reason it's there is so that it's meaningful when ultimately one or both of them dies in some tragic way.
Right. I think, oh, that's a good point. And that's an example.
My dog agrees.
Yeah. That's an example of one I don't particularly, like, doesn't resonate with me very much. Like, I wouldn't care if they died, I guess. Oh, I guess I would. I would care if Grey Worm died more because of the impact on Dany, if that makes sense.
Right.
Because I know that would be crushing to her. But I don't particularly care about the relationship a whole lot. Like, I care in the sense that, like, good for them. I'm glad they're happy with each other. And, like, they deserve to be happy. But I don't, yeah, at least in by comparison, that's probably one that I wouldn't mind too much. And I
think, like, how happy can they really be long term if he's been, like, castrated?
Right, exactly. Like, right, at some point, you so, have to, like, do something, right?
Yeah, like in this show, family's everything. So
right, that's true too. Yeah, it's not like he can give her children and stuff. So, are there anything else that you want to? Miscellaneous things about season 8 that you'd like to chat about before we dive into the trailer?
I think we should dive into the trailer, because I think that's going to bring us into a lot of other conversations.
Right. So you've watched it a bunch. Marcus, I don't think, cares to watch it, so I won't drag him into this. But so if you haven't watched the trailer, stop what you're doing and go watch it, unless you're driving. Then maybe pull over if you want. But so...
Or just listen to the audio.
Or just listen to the audio. The audio is fine, too. I want to talk about a few things. So the first of which is, what do you think? The first couple shots we get are Arya running, like, through the hallways of presumably Winterfell. What do you think she's running from? Do you think, like, they digitally erase whatever's chasing her? Or is it just really far behind her? Or what do you think the deal is?
It's a dragon.
Oh, you're awake over there.
It could be. It could be a dragon, but I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Because they're pretty big. And that scene takes place in the crypts of Winterfell, right? Which it looks like.
I believe so,
which is where they bury all of the dead from the Stark family.
Oh.
One thing to keep in mind is that, like, the trailer most likely does not follow, like, time, you know, yeah. So, like, they probably have things occurring out of order than they will actually happen,
right,
to event, you know, to try to foil conversations like this. And the other thing is that it could also be a dream sequence too. Like, they've done that before where they've shown things that don't actually happen.
That's a great, like, point. In the timeline. I didn't think of that.
But we know at this point that Arya is pretty badass and basically not afraid of anything.
Right. And we see that later in the trailer too.
Yeah. So like what could possibly shake her? And so the only thing I can think of is that if it takes place in the crypts of Winterfell, like, that means that there's a lot of dead relatives down there, right, including her mother, including Ned Stark, and including also any of these other characters that could potentially die in the Battle of Winterfell.
Right.
So the only thing I could think of that would really shake her is if she was running from, like, a zombie family member, some zombie Stark that got resurrected by the Night King.
Right. That's a great point. I hadn't even thought of the Stark, all the Stark, dead people down there that could be resurrected. I just figured it would be random white, 174 or something. But, it's particularly interesting because she's, pretty well equipped to fight them in that scene where she's running. She's got both a dragon glass dagger in her hand, and she's got that Valyrian steel dagger that, was Tyrion's and then Littlefinger's and et cetera, strapped to her hip. So she's pretty well equipped to fight either whites or like a White Walker, and she's, so that her sprinting away means it's, I think that's a really good point. It's probably one of her relatives that's dead, and that's what's freaking her out more so than the actual combat of the situation being overwhelming for her.
Yeah, there's the horde of zombies, right? So, we know from the scene with the Children of the Forest,
right?
Like inside the cave, hundreds of them, they climb walls, they climb ceilings. So, it could just be a numbers thing, but
right.
I think they're going to try to go with something deeper in that scene.
I agree. That's a great point. I think that's all pretty much I had in that section. The next shot I wanted to highlight was a shot of sort of the Kraken fleet, Euron's ship Silence, you see, with a bunch of golden armored soldiers crossing the ocean. And the word on the street is the blonde gentleman that looks strikingly similar to Jaime from behind is actually someone named Harry Strickland.
Harry Strickland.
Who's supposed to be a new character in Season 8. I haven't met him in the books yet, but I'm not through all of what's been published. I didn't know if you had any idea who this fella might be.
So Harry Strickland is the commander of the Golden Company. He's originally from Westeros, from some minor house that no longer exists.
Okay.
Actually, House Strickland.
Yeah.
So this is one of those things where I feel like it could go really, really wrong, right? Like the show can really fuck up in Season 8 if they're not careful because of things like the Golden Company, because there's this massive army that they have no context for. Knowing that this was coming, you'd think back in Season 3 or 4, they could just drop little breadcrumbs, maybe we should call the Golden Company. But they don't. Instead, they're just the Golden Company, yeah, we're going to hire them, and however many people, thousands of people they have, are just now going to be here and be this massive force in Season 8. So I'm not sure what that's going to look like. They could either play a significant role, or it could be, kind of like when House Tyrell switched over with Dany. They should have been big, but in fact, their whole thing was done in a scene.
Right.
So maybe the Golden Company comes over and the ships get sunk or they get incinerated by dragons or something as soon as they get there.
Right. Yeah. Because there's not a lot of development. I think there is a pretty cool history with them. There was they were a Westerosi army, is that right? I don't remember the context.
I think it's pretty blended. Honestly, those last two books were so much detail. I don't know exactly what I remember, but I'm pretty sure it's a mercenary army made up of people from all over the place.
Right. Yeah. I think the thing that I remember is that they always fulfill their contract or something to that effect. So they're a particularly ridiculously good fighting force. Kind of the Unsullied in terms of fighting prowess, I should say. That was all I was trying to get at. But like you said, there's no really development for that. So in the show, we don't, you shouldn't have to be a book reader if you're just watching the show to have that character development, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Totally. The interesting thing is that in the books, they actually left off with the Golden Company in Storm's End.
Okay.
Essentially landing on Dragonstone. In the books, Dany is not even in Westeros yet. So the Golden Company actually arrives before she does.
Oh wow.
Okay, so it's real. That's what I said. I'm real confused about what they're doing there and whose side they're ultimately going to end up on.
Right. That's true.
Because I'm pretty sure in the books that they're coming to fight for the Targaryen, or in the books there's Aemon or Aegon, whatever. Yeah, so they're coming to fight on his side, but he doesn't even exist as a character,
right?
In the show.
So. Right. That's a whole other strange day. Also, a quick side note, which is this a little shallow, but Harry Strickland is a pretty lame name as far as Game of Thrones names go. That's pretty...
Worse than Shaggy Dog?
Well, okay, but that's excusable because it's a little kid named him, you know what I mean?
Right. Fair enough.
So, like, at least there's some context there. This is like, you know...
I think that name is pretty sweet. Harry Strickland? That says man all over it.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's true. That's yeah.
Okay. Well, and I'm not... See, like, I don't know anything about Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But, like, to me, if I name my son Harry and middle name Strickland, like, I'm like, I ain't fucking with Harry, dude. No way. I ain't fucking with that guy.
That's fair.
Yeah. He only wears flannel, and he's a brand rep for beard oil.
Yes. Exactly.
That's pretty precisely.
Wait, what's beard oil?
Yeah, you could use some. Flaky face over there.
No,
just
no gray beard.
Gray
beard.
Yeah,
soften you right up.
So, the next shot I wanted to talk about is the one we get of Sansa on the ramparts of Winterfell, watching the dragons fly over. So I'm questioning. I think again they digitally took out some stuff here. So presumably Sansa's seen the dragons before, and she's seen them like come over, fly past Winterfell when they went up to the wall to sort of rescue everybody. On the other side there. So her look of like shock and awe at the dragons is, I don't think that's the first time she's seen them, so I don't think that's why she's shocked. I don't know what you, I want to hear what you think might be going on in that scene.
That wasn't a scene that I had really put too much thought into, honestly, because I actually forgot that she would have seen them when they went to rescue everybody north of the wall.
Yeah.
But do we know, can you tell, it's definitely not the ice dragon.
Right. Right? This is Drogon and Rhaegal? I forgot what the other one's name was. Anyways, yeah. It's not the ice dragon. So these are the two that are still under Dany's control. I think what I think happens here is just from the shots. So like you get, I'm pulling a little cinematography into this. So the first shot that I screenshotted is you see Sansa and then it's like an upshot where you see the dragons flying over her and she like looks over her shoulder and follows him. So that's sort of showing if that was the only thing you saw, I would say, okay, maybe that's actually her gawking, because that shot from the ground up at the dragons, it's like, okay, you're seeing it from Sansa's point of view. You're sympathizing with the character. That is a ridiculous thing to see, this giant dragon flying over the top of you. But the second shot that I screenshotted in the show notes here, you get, like, now the camera angle's way up in the sky and the dragons are flying up at the camera. And that shot, I think they digitally removed Dany and Jon riding both dragons. So that's what I think the significance of the scene is that Sansa's gawking that Jon's riding a dragon, and she's like, how the heck is he riding that thing? And that's why she's so surprised.
See, I didn't know they could cheat like that. So that actually would make a lot of sense. But I had never even considered that they could digitally remove things from the trailer.
Right. I think...
Sneaky bastards.
I know. Well, and the real evidence for me that sold it was because of the angle difference. And the angle of that second shot, it's like a perfect angle if you're trying to, like,
show people on the back of the dragon.
Right, exactly. So, like, if you wanted to have a second shot where you're continuing to show them flying over Winterfell, it might be a little more eye level with the dragons, or, like, you know, another low angle from, like, a ground point of view, and you see how giant they are in the sky or something. You know, or maybe show them fly past like a tower to show like how giant they are. But yeah, that angle is so perfect to show like, okay, this is clearly highlighting like the front faces of the riders that, you know, or, you know, theoretical riders in this case.
No, so that's a really good catch. I hadn't even thought of that.
That was my.
But I mean, haven't we always assumed that it was either going to be Jon or Tyrion? I mean,
yeah, pretty much. It's not a giant surprise that happens, but
yeah.
I think that's going to be like a big moment, like early on, that Jon, it's probably tied into what I was talking about before, where Jon realizes he's a Targaryen. He's like, oh, so maybe he's like exploring some powers. It's like, can I? That's another thing I think.
Burn me,
right, burn me quick, because that's interesting. Because in the books, he burns his hand, and it's a big plot point, right?
Right.
Like his hand, like healing over time as he's in the Night's Watch, but that never happens in the show. So there's like sort of a different set of rules. Like maybe he's got some more Targaryen dragonness in him that, you know, the show's going to explore, which is interesting.
Yeah, I'll be. That's a really good catch. I'm really curious to see how that develops for sure.
Did I put miscellaneous stuff at the bottom? Oh, I did. Okay. Oh, so I'll get into that later. The next shot that I thought was interesting is the one of Cersei in the throne room.
Is she crying? Is there like a tear in her eye, or is she just being Cersei?
I don't know what the deal is. She looks sad, but the thing that I wanted to highlight is she's drinking wine. And I don't... So, what happened with her being pregnant?
I don't think she was ever pregnant to begin with.
Oh, that's a good
point. This is going to bring us other places, but I think either... Like, this is what ultimately turns Jaime against her.
Yeah.
Like, when he realizes that she lied about this whole thing just to basically be the manipulative person that she is, whom I love very much, by the way.
Yeah.
I was thinking like this could also be the scene where Jaime dies, and this is her like kind of dealing with the grief of him dying.
Okay, yeah, that could be true. I think that's probably more true that she lied about being pregnant. I thought that maybe she miscarried the baby or something, and then that's why she was drinking wine again. I don't think she ever has a baby because of that prophecy earlier in the show. I think it's in the books, too, where she only has, you know, whatever number of golden-haired children. 3 or 4, I forget.
That's one of the prophecies from Maggie the Frog.
Yes.
And I think for sure that's the reason why I've never even... really accepted that she was pregnant to begin with was because of that. I mean, the one thing the show is really good at usually is sticking to the prophecies.
You're right.
You know, to twisting them a little bit, but it always kind of delivers what it promised through the prophecies in some capacity.
Right.
And we know that she's not having any more kids.
Yeah. I think... I didn't include the screenshot in the show notes here, but there was a golden armored figure standing in front of her in the throne room, and it was like... It's kind of obscure to... who they are, but I'm kind of just assuming it's Harry Strickland. Company.
Yep, totally agree. I don't know if they're going to stay on her side, though.
Yeah, I can't imagine many people stay on her side, especially if she's opposing, like, the Northern forces that are fighting against the Army of the Dead. It's like, okay, crazy lady, like, we've got bigger fish to fry here. Particularly right. dead fish here.
Yeah, no, exactly. Completely.
Screw you. I mean,
right.
But that's another point about the golden, that golden army. Like, why not give some character, some character development there? Because then you could have them break their oath, like when they're known for never breaking like their contract. And then if they break their contract, it's really significant. Like, hey, it could really highlight that. Hey, Cersei's crazy when these super solemn, super like loyal mercenaries are going to go break their contract to go fight the Army of the Dead instead of fighting on her side. That could be a cool plot point, but I don't know that that's going to pay off quite as well as it could, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, pretty much the only thing Cersei has to offer anybody is marriage. And she doesn't really want that because of Jaime.
Right.
And I think that's ultimately what's going to mess with the great Euron Greyjoy as well, or whatever they call him. Is it Euron? Is that?
I think it's Euron. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like I get the show and the books confused sometimes when it comes to character names.
Yeah. Don't they call him Euron in the books too, though? Don't they?
Yeah, but then there's also Victarion, and I feel like they've kind of combined the two characters into one in the show.
Right. Yeah, it's true. So beyond those few points in the trailer, there was a lot of like I call them hype up shots. Where it's just people's faces and some generic battle scenes. one of the things that people were pointing out online was that there's a shot of a bunch of horse hooves like running over snow, and people thought you could sort of see like a direwolf's paws in with the horse hooves. I didn't see that when I watched it on like the 0.25 speed when I was getting the screenshots, so I didn't really want to like formulate that theory. I would love to see more direwolves because I love, you know, Ghost would be great, but. We haven't seen him, I guess, because of budgetary issues or something. That's right. What they say. They'd rather spend
too much of the budget's going to the dragons,
right? And not enough to direwolf. So, which I kind of get, like that's a bigger plot point. But I wish we could see Ghost again, especially because he's such a big part of like John's, you know, it's like a big part of John's characters him having Ghost, at least in the books that I've read. So it'd be cool.
And he's the only character that still has their wolf,
right?
So it has symbolic value, too. I definitely think that we'll see direwolves in Season 8.
I hope so, especially now that we're talking about it. He's the only one that's got his direwolf still, and it would be cool to, especially if we get that melding of the sigils between the Targaryen and Stark. It would be cool if, like, Dany has her dragons, and Jon has his direwolf, and then, like, maybe, well, I don't know, because if Jon starts riding a dragon, then he's got, like, two animals. I don't know if Ghost hitches a ride, too, or what the deal could be.
Yeah, no idea.
That could get complicated. So maybe we don't see Ghost that much, because he just trades it for the dragon. But do you have any more, like, miscellaneous thoughts that you could chuck in there?
I want to, not on this specifically, but I just want to jump back to the prophecies, because there's two that I think have big implications still for Season 8.
Sure.
The first one is, again, for Cersei from Maggie the Frog, telling her that, you know, she's essentially, when her tears have drowned her, that she's essentially going to get strangled by the Valonqar, which is High Valyrian for little brother.
Ooh.
So she's always, like, this hated is one of the Tyrion. Reasons why, yeah, one of the reasons why she's always hated Tyrion, because she's always assumed that it was going to be him. But the book also makes a point that Cersei was born first, even though they're twins.
Right.
Cersei came out first, so she's older. So technically Jaime is her little brother also.
Oh, right, okay.
So I've always thought that maybe the twist is that Jaime kills her. Or Arya wearing Jaime's face kills her.
That would be better. I would prefer that.
So you guys have mentioned the books a lot, and I'm listening to this now. I haven't seen it. Excuse me. Do the books follow the show perfectly?
No. So I think they're pretty good up through, like, the third book. Like, matching book with season one, book one, season one, book two, etc. And then after season four and book four, it diverges pretty quickly. And they do start, like, varying. Like, I think book one and season one are almost exactly verbatim. But then after that, they start splitting further and further. I think after book four and season four, it's basically two totally different stories. Just, like, running in parallel.
So it's almost like the Star Wars EU Legends versus canon.
Yeah, I would say so.
The problem with the books was, like, that. So the books are great, but they're still expanding.
Right.
Like, the plots just in the world just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so somewhere around season four in the show, probably because they don't want to keep spending hundreds of millions of dollars per season on their budget, like, we have to start, you know, turning this thing around and condensing the story. So the changes that you see are usually, like, combining characters, or they're meant to really accelerate the timeline.
Right.
But it means that the show has moved ahead of the books in most ways.
Right. So that's how you get sort of the disconnect. And like you were saying before, it's almost like they're in the same universe, but two different stories, like, running in parallel.
Right.
Yes, that is the first book. Marcus is showing me on Audible.
Wow, it's 33 hours.
Yeah, that's not even the longest one.
That's
the first book only.
Which will take you about a semester if you're listening to it on your daily commute to work, like I am.
Right. Or half a semester.
Wow!
Right.
Dude, this universe is enormous. I love it so much.
But
in about 12 of those hours are spent describing food.
Right. Did you catch what John just said?
Yeah.
It's really vivid description, which is cool.
Well, most of those medieval-style books are very vivid, and they are really, really long.
Yeah, it's cool.
Because they want to immerse. So you've listened to the book versions of Star Wars books.
Right.
Is it the same quality? Like, their sound, like, that breaks it up? Or is it just somebody reading all the time?
It's just somebody reading. There's no sound effects like the Star Wars ones. I do prefer the Star Wars ones in that aspect, but the narrator does do, like, different voices for different characters and stuff like that. But you got to remember, they were also made, the audio recordings were made, like, when the books were coming out. So, like, the audio recording was made in, like, the 90s or, like, early 2000s. I forget when it was actually recorded.
Right.
So, like, it wasn't quite as easy to, like, incorporate stuff in there.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
On whatever
budget. Sorry I took us on a tangent, but
hey, it's important.
No, it's important.
We're selling you the way we sold John on SOTOR. We're selling you on Game of Thrones.
So that's why I'm thinking, because, like, I listen to, when I'm working in the shop, I listen to podcasts and stuff. I could listen to that book, and that would take me, you know, a month.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't listen to a podcast. I would just listen to that book.
Right. That's what I did for a while.
So the audiobooks are incredibly well done. I highly recommend them. The narrator is great. What's remarkable is that he has a voice for each character and somehow remembers what it is, like, across multiple books.
Right. I couldn't believe that. Because, for I get it for the main characters, because there's a lot of dialogue for them, but, like, even the side characters stay consistent, which is cool.
If you listen to a Star Wars book and Mark Thompson is reading it, he has all the characters with their own voices all the books. So, I mean, they're pros. Group.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry.
That's okay.
That's okay.
So sidebars are encouraged.
I have one other prophecy from the books to bring up, which is the prophecy for Lightbringer, which is the sword that, I guess it's in the books, it's Azor Ahai, and in the show, it's the prince who was promised.
Right.
They don't say
Azor Ahai at all in the show?
I don't think so. I could be wrong, but...
I think that sounds right. I think they've only really said the prince that is promised, but it's the same...
Same person.
Yeah.
But the sword that this person, this hero, is supposed to use to fight the Great Other, a.k.a. the Night King, there's a prophecy about it, about how it was tempered and forged, not in water, not in the blood of a lion, but the only thing that allowed him to make the sword was in Nissa Nissa, who... was this person's wife, according to the prophecy.
Right.
So now that we know that Stannis is not the prince who was promised, I think that most people are thinking that it's probably Jon Snow.
Right.
So how does he actually get this sword, and who is his Nissa Nissa?
Right. Could it be Daenerys?
Yeah. Does Jon kill Dany, or is it just someone that they care about? Like, maybe, I've always thought maybe Jon kills Arya. Because that would be another person that's very meaningful to him, that would kind of fulfill at least the spirit of the prophecy.
Right. Yeah, that would be interesting if he killed Arya. I can't see a context in which he does, though, unless she turned into a white or something. But then I don't think that's really, like, the spirit of the prophecy. Because, like, the prophecy, it's, like, a big sacrifice. Because isn't his wife pregnant also or something?
That I don't remember, but it could be.
Yeah, I think... yeah, I think the big sacrifice comes... I don't know if there's, like, a clear analog in the show to that. Because, like, in what context would Jon have to kill Dany, you know what I mean, to do that? Unless, like... I don't know. Unless he gets retold this prophecy or something, and, like... there's got to be some extra info, I think, for that.
Or, like, it's an accident or something like that. But...
or, it's an accident, like, she gets thrown in front of him or something, and... that could, and then he, like, freaks out and goes and chops down a bunch of White Walkers and kills the Night King. That could happen. That would be interesting.
Or unless it's like a Professor Snape thing from Harry Potter, where, like, she's already dying, and then it's just like, you know, take my blood and make Lightbringer.
Oh, that would work too, John. I like all your ideas here. This is good.
Well, you know, I'm actually one of the writers for the show.
Oh, what? Well, you know, we could have made this a way more important podcast. So I think before we wrap things up, I had, like, a couple miscellaneous comments, nothing too crazy. I don't see any Clegane Bowl stuff in the trailer, which made me sad, but that would be cool.
So it's got to happen.
It's
going to happen because of the fans. I mean, that's going to be specifically for the fans.
I really hope so. Yeah.
Can you say that again?
Clegane Bowl?
Clegane Bowl?
Clegane Bowl.
Clegane
Bowl. Get hype.
Yes.
2019.
There's two brothers that hate each other that are really good fighters. Their last name is Clegane. So instead of the Super Bowl, it's them fighting. It's the Clegane Bowl.
Okay.
It would be awesome. It's a big fan hype thing.
Yep.
We got to see it.
Well, yeah, so I guarantee you they're going to give you guys...
fan service.
Fan service.
Yeah.
Like, this is it. Yeah, they may have the prequels... and, you know, there's going to be little Anakin and Darth Maul, but, like,
yeah,
you've got, but nothing is ever going to compare to these 8 seasons ever again.
Right.
So I can't imagine you guys aren't going to get the fan service that you want.
Yeah.
Because, do you remember the show Lost? Have you ever watched that?
Yep.
Okay. You know, in the end, you know, they gave people fan service, but people were so upset on the ending.
Yeah.
because how could else could they have ended the show?
Right, it was just a bizarre ending. It didn't make any sense. Yeah.
Exactly. So they're going to give you guys your fan service, but it's like Star Wars. You guys, everybody has a different view of how this show is supposed to end.
Yeah.
So not everybody's going to be happy, but I guarantee you they're going to hit everybody's hearts through these, what is it, eight episodes?
Six
episodes. Yep. They're going to give every single person that watches the show one piece of what they've always wanted. You might not get it all, but there's going to be something there that you guys get.
Right.
Yeah, you're going to get your Clegane Bowl, but you're going to pay for it with the blood of Samwell Tarly.
Yeah, it's going to be something like... That's a good point. Nothing comes for... You know, no fan service comes Nothing for free comes in Game of Thrones. Free. Yeah. I had... Oh, we already talked about John maybe being resistant to fire or something, but along those same lines, I'm like, maybe, like, we get some extra power-ups, so to speak, for the side of the living, because if, as it shakes out now, I don't know how the heck they're going to compete with the side of the dead if they can just, like, you know, take down dragons or whatever, you know, fairly easily that we saw in the end of Season 7. So I thought the dragons would be the trump card, but I didn't realize they could, you know, shoot them down or whatever.
Well, we know Bronn can also shoot down dragons.
That's true, too. So, yeah, that's no longer quite the trump card for that, you know, for our Stark Targaryen force combination.
Right.
So maybe, like, I was thinking the Red Priests / Priestesses, I forgot the name of that specific religion with the Lord of the Light, but maybe they can figure out how to sort of, I know they can revive people from the dead, but maybe they could figure out how to do it more en masse, and you could have like a bit of a war of attrition between the side of the living and the dead or something like that. That could be fairly interesting. I don't know if that might pan out, if that would work in the show, if that might be just ridiculous, but it could be cool to see some more like mystical power-ups along the lines of like Jon discovering some more Targaryen powers or something like that, that or for sure, you know, that he's got. Before I want to wrap up, do you want to just like spitball how you might predict the show's going to end?
The thing I love about this show is I honestly have no idea.
Yeah.
So like my crackpot theory is that the Night King wins.
Yeah.
The really satisfying ending would be if Cersei wins because she's my favorite character.
I could see that. For sure.
And then what I think the most realistic ending is actually going to be Sansa and Tyrion taking the Iron Throne together. We know that Dany can't have kids, supposedly.
Right.
So it doesn't make sense to go through 8 seasons and all this effort for her to just have to, you know, essentially not have any heirs and go through this whole thing again.
Right.
So because they're already married... And because they kind of like each other, I think that's going to be the best choice, assuming right. that the story has a remotely happy ending.
Yeah.
But I think that Sansa is most likely either Jon will die or Sansa is going to end up fighting Jon to get there.
Right. Oh, that could be interesting. Go ahead, Marcus.
Okay, so my ending is everybody's going to die,
and the Night King wins.
It's over.
Yeah.
See you later. Everybody's dead. They're going to just drop the mic and be like, everybody's on the ground dead, and it's roll credits, and you're not going to know what's going to happen.
Next.
And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Everybody's dead. What happens now? And hey, guess what? 5 years from now, Game of Thrones comes back.
Whoa.
And there's another sequel. Continent, too. So that's why that works, too. It's not as crazy as you think.
Right.
Like, the Night King just rules Westeros, and we still got all the other continent with all the human and living people. Because presumably they don't cross the water.
Right. That could be interesting. My thought, I kind of liked your John accidentally / finishing off Dany to be, you know, the prince that is promised theory, and then John survives. But John doesn't want to rule. So, like, maybe he could rule the North, but definitely doesn't want the Iron Throne. So it's going to be someone else ruling, you know, from King's Landing. So having Cersei rule at the end could be interesting. Or, yeah, I think setting up Tyrion and Sansa or something like that makes the more sense to me. But I don't think Dany's living the end of the season. Or if she does, then they're going to, like, ixnay her not being able to have kids thing. You know what I mean? I think she's going to be pregnant and then probably die, and that's going to be super tragic because she's, you know, not supposed to be able to have kids or something, if I had to guess.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and quite honestly, Sansa deserves it, though. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw over the weekend, Sophie Turner was at the Rangers game and she was on the Jumbotron.
Yeah.
And when she saw herself on there, she chugged a glass of wine and just proved like what a boss she is. And after that, I'm like, okay, you know what? Like, she should definitely sit on the Iron Throne.
Oh, that was a Game of Thrones person. I saw it and I was like, what does it matter if this person is drinking a pounding a glass of wine?
Yeah, because
she's a pro drinker. Like, who cares?
Yeah, no, they wine drinking is a big theme in the show and the book.
Well, I had no idea who she was.
Yeah, and she's a main character.
All right.
Which is awesome. Well, that was awesome. Thanks for coming on the show, John.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. We'll have to catch up again after the season is over.
Yes, we'll have to talk
about our disappointments.
Right. Things we would have done better if we were
right. At least post an update and see if we were right about any of this stuff.
That's true, too. That's true, too.
John, if anybody wants to continue the conversation, plug your pluggables.
So the best place to get a hold of me is actually on Twitter, at RedinJM.
Perfect.
Well, thank you.
If it's for Game of Thrones, please send it my way.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. See you later, guys.
See ya.
Good night.
What are you guys talking about in here?
Find out next episode of Working Class Nerds.